This is Monty in the Morning, the show Phoenix Magazine readers voted number one talk radio show in Arizona.
Number one during your morning commute.
Number one whenever news breaks during your day.
And number one whenever and wherever you want to talk sports.
Now it's time for Monty in the Morning.
Hey, yo. What's up, man? Hi, Jake.
Hi.
Good morning to you. Jake does what everybody should do, which is he subscribes to the Monty Show on YouTube. If you are watching the show on Periscope, it's coming to an end. Periscope is going to turn itself off, and then you're only going to have YouTube to find the Monty Show. So just search the Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, the Monty Show on YouTube, and that is exactly, my friends, where you will find the Monty Show. And then just click subscribe. You get daily highlights from the show. You get full show archives on YouTube. Just search The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Of course, if you're looking for our podcast, just search The Monty Show anywhere you get a podcast. A lot to talk about today. Jake was a little cranky in the pre-show meeting because roll tide, Alabama. Nick Saban's got 7 national championships. What do you got?
Holy cow. Alabama won the national championship again?
Wow. Yes, Alabama's won the national championship. And I guess here's the question. Are you compelled by it? Were you excited to watch the ball game with Alabama and Clemson? I mean, Ohio State. Finally, Clemson wasn't there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dabo sucks. The Ohio State played Alabama last night. I should say got on the same field with Alabama last
seriously.
Night. Didn't really compete. And the question, I guess, is do you find it compelling that Alabama's been in 6 of 7
yeah.
College football playoffs, as has Clemson. Nick Saban's got 3 championships of the 7 that have been decided. He's got 7 altogether, 4 in the BCS, Bowl Championship Series, Roll Tide. Is that good football to you? Is that compelling? Is it good for college football that Alabama, is there every single year?
Right. No, I don't think it's great for college football, and the reason I say that is just because if you think about take a local fan, like a BYU fan or a Utah fan or whatever your team is on the local level, once your team is either out of the running to even have a chance to get into the college football playoff, or they were never gonna have a chance, whatever the situation is, I just don't believe that Ohio State, Alabama, and really Alabama every single year, is what you want to see. I mean, it would be nice if there was a different team there every once in a while. I look at, and not that structurally you can compare football to basketball, but I look at March Madness. I look at why everybody loves it so much, and it's because you get a different result every single year, and it's extremely deep. You've got round after round after round, and it's exciting basketball. You've got buzzer beaters. You've got all kinds of stuff. So when I look at football, I just start to think, hey, is it not a formality that Alabama is just going to be in the college football championship game every single year? Like it is, because it essentially is. So to me, it's not compelling at all. And last night's a great example. Last night, yeah, I got off of work at 6, and I said, Alabama and Ohio State are on. I better turn that on and just catch a couple minutes of that just to see what happens, make sure nothing crazy happens, because we all knew Alabama was going to win. So that's why I say, to me, it's not compelling and it's not healthy for college football.
Well, I think when you talk about healthy for college football, a whole bunch of people watching the TV last night is healthy for college football. And I don't think there's any question, no matter who you are a fan of. I'm a fan of Notre Dame. I know that Notre Dame is not going to play for a national championship most years because Brian Kelly's our head coach. I say our because I'm number, 94, on the end of the bench. But the point is, I know Brian Kelly's not a national championship caliber head coach.
Yeah.
But is it good for college football that Alabama is playing for a national championship? I disagree with you, and I'm going to say yes, it is, because people want to see the best of the best. And whether you like it or not, it's almost indisputable that Alabama is by far the most talented. And after what we saw this college football playoff, the best team in college football, hands down, not even a question. And I could even make the argument that Alabama is the best team in the history of college football. The 2020 Alabama Crimson Tide are the best team to ever play college football. They have 11 SEC wins, right? Winning 11 games in the SEC is nothing short of miraculous. And it's very difficult on any level to discredit Alabama for doing that.
Right.
So I understand that there may be boredom or burnout, but Alabama feels different than Clemson. Like, Dabo Sweeney's a cock. I can't stand him, right? But I have a hell of a lot of respect for Nick Saban.
Right.
And I think that that makes a difference. When you have now the best coach in the history of college football doing it year in and year out in 2021, my guess is at least five more years out of Nick Saban, I think it's hard not to watch. The issue is for teams like BYU.
Yeah.
The issue is if you're a fan of the Pac-12, you're never getting in. Is that horrible mismanagement? Yes, it is. But the issue is, you know, as a fan of the Pac-12, that you are never, at least not now, never going to play for a national championship. With all due respect, because Oregon and Washington have played for a national championship, but on the regular, you're going to have a miraculous season.
Yep.
If you're the Utah Utes, everything is going to have to break perfectly. Recruiting, development, coaching, nutrition, you know, off-season, guys not getting injured, guys not getting arrested, guys not getting kicked off the team, like any of the off-season thing that strikes just about every team in this country, you're going to have to be perfect. Because unlike Alabama, you're not 17 deep at every important position. You don't lose Tua Tagovailoa and then have Mac Jones step up and almost win a Heisman Trophy. Right? I mean, and he didn't win it because his teammate Devontae Smith won it. Right? Like that. But that's my point.
Yeah.
So we talk about the burnout factor and we talk about being pissed that Alabama's there every year. They do it better than everybody else.
Yeah.
So what would you change?
I would make it a deeper playoff. That's what I would do. I think, you know, I'm not saying that Alabama doesn't deserve to win it every time they get there. I'm not saying that. They are the best team. They are earning it. And yeah, this year in particular, they did a hell of a job. 11 SEC wins, greatest SEC team ever. Okay, cool. Awesome. I don't put as much value on that because I've seen them every single year. But that's still a great accomplishment. That's still awesome, like great stuff out of them. What I would have changed is I want teams like, you know, a BYU, teams like, you know, the smaller teams. I'm not saying every small team. I'm saying a smaller end team who's not, you know, a well-known nameplate in every household who goes 11, 12, 13 and 0 on any particular year to at least have a chance to play into, you know, a playoff game. Like if the college football playoff was six rounds instead of just two rounds.
Right.
Give people a chance to at least play one playoff game. If they lose and get their ass handed to them 50 to nothing, great. We'll see you later.
But how do you figure that out? How do you figure that out? That's my question. Like, again, it's not like Alabama gets a free pass to the college football playoff, right?
Yeah, but they essentially do. They get catered to by the people who vote and determine who goes where.
But why is it, and I know that this is an argument that is had on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Why does the SEC get catered to? Why do they get that preferential treatment? Well, because they're better than everybody. They're more talented than everybody.
But
ask
that
yourself,
does not mean, just because they're better than everybody does not mean that they should get far and away more opportunity than other schools. Would you say that the BYU team this year with Zach Wilson and everything that they had going, they would have never beat Alabama.
Never.
But I think they would have gave them a good game. And I think it would have been great for viewership.
I don't think they would have. I think Alabama, with all due respect to Kalani Sitake and his staff, Alabama would have beat them by 50.
Okay.
Alabama would have boat raced BYU. Because Alabama is, and we saw this, Alabama destroyed Ohio State, who would have destroyed BYU or anybody else you put in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio State is an elite football team. You look at Alabama. Alabama is 4 or 5 deep at every skill position. They just had a wide receiver win the Heisman Trophy.
Mm-hmm.
You you had your quarterback and your wide receiver in the race to win the Heisman Trophy. Like, you're deeper. They're look how fast Alabama is. Alabama is just they're fast, they're physical, they're deep, they're well coached, they're disciplined.
That's great. That's fine and dandy. Awesome. What I'm saying is this can't go on for a decade at a time where Alabama's going to be in it damn near every year. They're going to win it most years, and it's just and everybody else is just watching.
They've been there 6 out of 7 years, like, as has Clemson.
And I don't want this to come off as I'm trying to take something from them. My overreaching big picture point here is that for college football, for a guy like me who's not a huge college football guy to really care about the national championship, there's got to be more of a story than Alabama versus the world, because that's essentially what college football is. Yeah, we get a lot of great matchups, and this year was a lot different because of COVID, but, you know, yeah, like, I love the Alabama going to LSU and winning a huge game, like, in those caliber of games during the regular season. Yeah, I love those just as much as anybody else. But what I am saying is that these teams that go 11-12-0 as underdogs should at least be able to sniff a playoff opportunity. And that's just not the case.
Well, Barry, the New York Giant fan says we don't give participation medals. I hate Alabama, but they belong there. They deserve it.
I'm not saying that they don't belong or they don't deserve it. I'm not saying that. Mm-hmm. They should be there. They're the best team. And if you ran them through a process of, like, if the college football playoff, again, was, you know, 8 rounds instead of 4 rounds or 2 rounds or whatever, like a more rigorous process to get to the championship game,
yeah,
they probably still win the championship, and that's fine. My point is I want more teams to have the opportunity to say, hey, we got into the college football playoff as BYU, as whatever team.
You got to play your way into that. And this year, yeah, BYU was really close to doing that.
I don't think they were that close.
And they lost. Well, I think they'd have been in a New Year's Six if they had beaten Coastal. They'd have been in a New Year's Six. I have no doubt about that. Zach Wilson was everybody's All-American.
Yeah.
He is now, depending on which mock draft you watch, Zach Wilson is arguably the first quarterback off the board. It's just a matter of, you know, who you ask.
Yeah.
That's sensational. I think that if they had beaten Coastal Carolina, they're probably in a New Year's Six Bowl. Now, at that point, you're going up against a very good football team, so who knows what happens? All I'm saying is there is a certain cut, and it's like this in all sports. There are the good, and then there are the elite. There's no more middle class in college football.
Mm.
You're either really good or you're just like everybody else.
Mm.
And right now, if we're being honest, look at most of the conferences. The Big Ten got a couple of teams.
Yeah, they're all top heavy.
Right?
That's what they all
yeah,
are.
Yeah, they're all top heavy. So I don't know how you fix that. Somebody's gonna have to go and tell. I mean, Indiana's kind of an interesting example.
Like,
you know,
that's
like
a great example.
Indiana won a bunch of games this year and surprised everybody. Now go do it again.
Yeah, but, like, you know, they're probably not going to be able to do it again because they're not going to be able to recruit year after year after year the way Alabama is. And the other point here, and again, I want to be super clear. I'm not trying to take anything from Alabama. I'm not saying that they don't deserve to be there. But what I am saying is, you know, again, a team like Indiana – who everybody knows is not going to, you know, do what they did this year after year after year the same way in Alabama can, they should have a shot. And this is why I say, like, you know, you can't do a round robin 64 team tournament in football. That's not going to work. That's just not feasible. But that excitement that we all get around March Madness, that excitement that we all get around the Cinderella story who, you know, had a hell of a run and, you know, they beat a team they really shouldn't have beat, you know, and everything's awesome. You don't get that in football. You simply do not get that in football. You get, hey, yeah, we won 10 games. We got to our bowl game. Have a nice season.
But, and I don't mean to be redundant. Is there any more flawed sport in the world than college basketball right now? Like, we're not even probably going to have an NCAA tournament this year. There's a severe shortage of talent in college basketball because LaMelo Ball is playing in the NBA,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't think, to sum this up, I don't think college football is broken. I don't think college football needs to be fixed. I think it would be great to see somebody other than Alabama and Clemson compete for a national championship. But until somebody is able to consistently recruit and compete at the level of Alabama, I just don't know why you would take that away from Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State. Like, Ohio State was only in this year because they're a dominant program over the last decade. And they've done that with Tressel and Urban Meyer and now Ryan Day. And it's the Ohio State, right? I don't think college football is broken. I think if you're good enough and if you win enough games, that Utah and Boise and everybody else has shown that you can get there. I think it's very difficult to do.
It's almost impossible.
And by the way, should it be easy? I don't think it should be easy.
It shouldn't be as difficult as it is now. It shouldn't be. It should not be. You shouldn't be able to go 10-0 and not even get a sniff.
Yeah, I just don't know how you fix it. I don't know what that, because there's no solution there. You either win the game or you don't. And find me a team to compete with Alabama.
Yeah, right now there's not.
There's not. And I was very happy to see Clemson go out. You know, I don't know. I love college football.
It's not fun for me to watch it. It's not. I mean, it's
college
really
football
not.
On the whole or the college football playoff?
The college football playoff is not fun. I love a great regular season matchup of two heavy hitters. You know, again, you know, the example I always go to is Alabama going to LSU in a just massively packed stadium. And like, I love those moments in college football, but I'm not like giddy to get off of work last night and turn on college football. The only reason I turned it on is because I knew we'd be talking about it. Literally.
You were more interested in.
I was more interested
in a regular
watching,
season NBA game.
I was more interested in figuring out why the Suns were down 26 points with 24 minutes left. That's what I was more interested in. I was more interested in figuring out why. I was more interested in seeing LaMelo Ball perform at a high level for a rookie again. That's what I was more interested in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't blame you for that. So make sure you hit subscribe on our YouTube channel. Just search The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show. One of the more interesting stories that we've been following this season in the NFL has been Doug Peterson, the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, fired yesterday. And fired because they were a hot mess. Although most people are going to tell you that Doug Peterson was fired because of what he did with Jalen Hurts and Nate Sudfeld. I would tell you, and if you go back and listen to our shows over this season, I would tell you he should have been fired because they were not very good. And I think one of the main signs of dysfunctional football teams is regression at the quarterback position, because so much money is spent by NFL teams to develop their quarterbacks. And when you have dysfunction at that position, and you have quarterbacks backsliding. And look throughout the NFL,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
If you look at my R&We, the Chicago Bears, Mitch Trubisky's backslid. That's because they're dysfunctional. Matt Nagy's not a good head coach.
And the whole organization has backslid since that playoff appearance.
Yeah, not a good head coach, right? Not an elite head coach. Awesome play caller sometimes, unless he's a head coach. Awesome offensive coordinator, not a good head coach.
Yeah.
Mitch Trubisky backslid. No better example of that than Carson Wentz in Philadelphia. And Doug Peterson paid for that yesterday with his job. I think Carson Wentz is the overarching reason he lost the job. But I do think that Nate Sudfeld situation, you can't tell me that played no role in firing Doug Peterson.
I think it was the final nail in the coffin. I think there was a buildup to it. I think when you have Super Bowl appearances and you win Super Bowls and you do all these great things, you know, and Carson Wentz is having an MVP caliber season, and then he gets hurt, and then he's never the same. And, you know, you just have all this dysfunction, because the truth of the matter is, you know, you put your heart and soul into Carson Wentz being your guy. He was a hell of a quarterback before he got hurt. And so then he gets hurt and you're never the same team. The belief in the players is not there because they're playing with a backup quarterback. Doug Peterson's trying to figure out, you know, how he's going to rerun the Philly special or something like it to make something happen. And it never happens. And so the truth of the matter is, once Carson Wentz got hurt, his job was done. I mean, everything after that injury took him to, yeah, look, we got to move on. That, I mean, and they're in a place now, much like the Bears and other organizations, where you need a new head coach. You likely need a new quarterback for one reason or the other, and that's just where you are. And it's unfortunate, but it's true.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see which of these openings is most in demand, because I actually don't think the Philadelphia Eagle job is a good job. And I look at things like, you know, I look at the Houston Texans. I look at the New York Jets. I look at jobs that are open in the NFL, and I'm like, I still maintain that the not San Diego, Los Angeles Chargers who play in the Rams stadium is the best job in the NFL right now.
Yeah, it's a good job.
That's available.
But the ownership, I mean,
is terrible. The Spanos family is terrible.
If you're a head coaching candidate and you're talking about moving your family and basically uprooting your life to go and take that job, are you not at least a bit concerned that you won't make it even 5 years? You know, under that ownership group? I mean, because when you take a head coaching position, I mean, I would think it's your goal to at least make it 5 years, right?
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, you know, the greats make it, you know, again, it might be a little unfair to compare people to, like, Bill Belichick or another coach who's made it a decade, but those coaches who make it a decade, you know, they are there for a reason, whether ownership likes them or not.
Yeah. I look at the jobs that are open. I don't know. What's a better gig, the Atlanta Falcons or the Philadelphia Eagles? I mean, I think,
would say the Falcons, but...
Yeah, I think you have an owner in Atlanta, in Arthur Blank, who loves to spend his money, right? I mean, the guy loves to spend that cheddar. Now, does he spend it wisely? Probably not, right? But they have a beautiful stadium. You have stability at the quarterback position if you want it in Matt Ryan. And I think you have... You know, you have guys like Calvin Ridley. I mean, like you have talent on that roster, and it'll be interesting to see what
just
plays
that,
out.
You know, little guy Julio. You know,
yeah, Julio. Well, but see, again, I go back to Julio Jones, yeah. And I think he's been a huge disappointment, mainly because he can't stay on the field.
But why can't he stay on the field?
Because he's always hurt.
Because he's always double teamed, and because he's the only guy that anyone has to care about on that team.
Yeah, but Calvin Johnson was on the field all the time, and that guy was triple teamed. I think health in the NFL is want to and genetics.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you just don't have the genetics to stay healthy. And I think Julio's one of those guys who is always battling his body.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. Does he not do what LeBron James does? Does he not put millions of dollars into his body? I have no idea.
Well, I know that's obviously a fact that not every athlete puts millions into their body, but I don't know if he does or not.
Yeah. It'll be Matt Ryan's 36. I think there could be some change there. Detroit Lions or the Philadelphia Eagles? Well, I'm going to take the Eagles over the Lions job.
Yeah, the Lions job is wholly unattractive.
I mean, they again, I think you have a way overpaid quarterback in Matthew Stafford who hasn't proven anything.
Yeah.
I think this goes all the way back to Barry Sanders retiring just out of the blue because he didn't want to be there anymore.
Yeah.
I think that's who the Detroit Lions are, sadly. And I actually think the Lions are the worst job in the NFL. You know, I mean,
it's nothing to play for. Like you're...
Well, you're not talented.
Yeah, like, what are you going to do there? You know? I mean, it's not like the ownership group has gone out of their way to say, hey, yeah, we're going to hire a guy, and then, boy, oh, boy, we're getting that war chest out, and we're going to sign a bunch of people. You know, like...
Well, and then it comes to the job that I know you want, which is the Houston Texans job.
Yeah.
Right? Like, is the Houston Texans job more attractive than the Philadelphia Eagles job? You have an incompetent owner in Cal McNair,
yeah,
right, who, in my opinion, is just not great. You now have a situation where you hired Nick Caserio to be your general manager, which pissed off your franchise quarterback, who says that you didn't go through the proper due diligence of interviewing different candidates and candidates of color. And, like, Deshaun Watson is legitimately
he's pissed off. Yeah, he's pissed.
And he has told people he's open to being traded.
To the Miami Dolphins.
Well, fuck, if you're the Bears, go get him.
Yeah.
I'm being, you passed on him once.
I would go and get him.
Right? Ryan Pace, save your job and make a trade. Go get Deshaun Watson. Yeah. Right? Unfortunately, Bill O'Brien's not there anymore. You could trade a Mitch Trubisky for anyway, I'll stop. I think, and I could be wrong, I think the Eagle job is better than the Texans job. You're a recent Super Bowl champion in Philly.
The only thing that I would say the Texans job has over the Philly job, because I would say that they're both highly dysfunctional as organizations, is is Deshaun Watson. And if you can get that job and you can keep Deshaun and you can keep Watt, you know, and you can and
no,
you
you're
can
not keeping
retool.
J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt's leaving. I mean, he's 32. He's often injured. They were one of the worst teams against the
and
run this year.
He hasn't won.
And by the way, they don't have a first or second round pick. Remember that. I mean, yeah. You are in a deep, deep hole in Houston. And I don't know who winds up being the head coach there, but if I am the Houston Texans, I love Deshaun. I trade him and restock my draft this year.
Probably.
You know, and he wants out. Okay, cool. Here.
Man, if I'm the Bears, I go in all over that, dude.
Just give me what you give me what I got. Give me what I got, and you can give me Deshaun Watson. Here's you know, I would, honestly.
Make it happen.
That's the energy that that Chicago Bear team needs. I don't know if Deshaun would play in cold weather Chicago. I have no idea.
I think he would.
Well, look where he went to college. Did he go to college? No, he went to Clemson.
Yeah.
Like, the guy's always been a warm weather quarterback. Talking about going to the Miami Dolphins, it doesn't snow in Miami, at least not yet.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that it snowed in Madrid, Spain?
God,
that was
really
crazy. Oh, yeah. Anyway, the point is, I think the Eagle job is better than the Houston job. I just think that the thing that stands out to me about the Eagles job is you have a recent Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So you have some talent there. You have an owner who, and I hesitate to say likes to win, because I don't know what the hell they were doing this year.
He likes to burn it to the ground.
Yeah, like, but you have an owner in Jeffrey Lurie who seemingly wants to do what it takes to win. Newer stadium, 18 young quarterbacks. You have a passionate fan base, but you never win.
Yeah.
And then you ran the Philly special and won the Super Bowl.
I mean, there's clearly something to play for in Philly. I mean, clearly. I mean, with all those things that you just listed off, again, winning a Super Bowl in Philly, there are a few markets that would, you know, are more glorious to win a Super Bowl in than Philly. You know, it's a great town. But I think, yeah, I think all these situations with any organization we're talking about here all are basically predicated on the relationship that the head coach, the GM, and the owner have as a group.
Well, and I think when you look at the GM situation in Philly with Roseman,
yeah,
I mean, they're going to have to cut how much?
A 30, ton, dude.
30, 40 million,
yeah.
50 million from the cap. I mean, you can't
You're gonna
release.
You're going to be bad.
You can't release Carson Wentz because you owe him $60 million at that point. That's a $60 million cap hit.
Yeah, you're not doing that.
He's a fifth-year guy coming off the worst season of his career. You're screwed.
Yeah, I mean, you're going
Philly.
To be bad for a couple seasons. But I think if you were going to take that job, you got to take that job with that understanding.
Yeah.
And you, but the GM and the owner, got to be on the same page about that, and then there's got to be a plan to get better.
The Jet job or the Philly job?
Philly job.
Well, the Jets have $71 million in cap space.
Yeah, well, the Jets and ownership is awful.
Yeah, the Johnson family hasn't historically been very good at winning football games.
When's the last time they did anything relevant?
It's been forever.
Darrell Revis, when he was on the defense? Is that when they were
and
good?
And that ended in disaster.
Like,
and he wound
I
up
mean,
playing for the Patriots.
Dude, it's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. I just don't know what you do. How do you take the Philly job instead of the Jet job, when the Jets have the second most cap space behind Jacksonville and the number two pick in the draft?
Because it's not all about the money. Yes, the money plays a big role in winning. Of course it does. But I guess the thing for me, if I was looking at these jobs and I was a candidate that was in demand, that I knew I could get any of these jobs that I really wanted to, you know, that I went after. Yeah, the money is important, but I think what's more important is job security, right? You don't want to take a job and then be let go by the Cardinals 1 year after you took the job, right? You don't want to go somewhere and then lose your ass after the first season because the team was bad and everything was horrible, right? So you want to go somewhere where it's okay if you're bad. But it's not okay if you're bad, and then the GM's like, it's your fault we're bad, and the owner's like, we're firing
you. And the thing that should bring pause to anybody looking at the Jet job.
Yeah.
They hired Adam Gase.
Yeah.
After a terrible run in Miami, they hired Adam Gase, and now they fired Adam Gase.
Mm-hmm.
And Christopher Johnson, and those of you who don't know ownership in the Jets, you probably don't give a damn about this, but Woody Johnson is the ambassador to the UK, so his brother Christopher's been running the team. Who immediately hired Adam Gase. But the thing that should really worry you is the same thing that should really empower you. there's no holds barred on this roster.
Yeah.
You're in a situation with your quarterback and Sam Darnold that you can say, okay, are we? You're at his fifth year option. Are we going to pick that up? Well, I would guess at this point you wouldn't, right? Because he has been wildly inconsistent. So why would you invest long term in Sam Darnold? You wouldn't. My point is, you got $70 million, the number two pick, and you're not married to the quarterback that you have.
Yeah,
I think it's a better job than Philly. You know, I just think it is one of those things where you have the opportunity to really grow yourself.
You do.
But are the Jets going to do what it takes to win? That's a question that I don't know the answer to. Now,
yeah.
Having said that, and I hate to say this, I think the Spanos family in San Diego who play in Los Angeles in a debt consolidation stadium known as SoFi, I actually think that the Charger job is the second best job open in the NFL. And I say that because you have a great young quarterback.
Yeah.
They've drafted well. They seem to have direction.
Yeah.
Right? They seem to really want to win. So I guess my question is, how worried about the Spanos family are you?
Well, you know, I would be worried about it. Certainly, I'd be really worried about it. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably be like a 6 or a 7. I want to understand, like, where the Spanos family is at with this hire. Like, if I was going into an interview, one of the main questions I would have for the Spanos family is, hey, I'd literally say to them, like, hey, I love this opportunity. I want to be here, but I want to make sure that if I'm here, you know, we're, you know, not doing a one and done. We're not doing any of that. Because that's what, when I think of the Spanos, I think of the word volatile. You made a volatile decision to move the team.
Volatile or emotional? Because I would argue their departure from whale's vagina was really, thank you. The drop machine. Oh my God, the drop machine works.
It works.
Wow.
It works.
I would argue that their departure from San Diego was fueled by emotion.
Right.
And I would argue that they probably regret that. But here's what I wouldn't argue. They've actually done a good job on the field. The biggest issue with that team has been close games and clock management.
Mm-hmm.
You can fix that. Right. Think about all the young talent they have. Right. Like if you think about Keenan Allen.
Yeah.
Derwin James, Mike Williams, Austin Eckler.
They are a good team.
Again, I think obviously the quarterback position there with Justin Herbert is solidified. Joey Bosa.
Yeah.
Think about Joey Bosa, stud defense. Like there's everything you want as a head football coach.
Listen, they could have been a playoff team this year.
Should've.
If they had better coaching
should've.
And won the close games, they had the opportunity to be a postseason team.
16 of the Chargers' 20 losses over the past 2 years have been by a margin of one score or less.
That's what I'm saying. They're not out of these games.
That's my point. With all due respect to Coach Lynn, I think a better coach and they're in the playoffs this year. And yeah. I think they are a terrifying team in a wild card round.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
You know, like yeah. I think that and you know who they really are right now? They're the Buffalo Bills from last year.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to run into them this coming season. They're going to have a new head coach. I think, bro, I think it is the number one job. I would put the Jags job number two and the Jet job number three. And I know that's crazy to say that.
Yeah, I mean, Jets or Eagles, I mean, they're right next to each other. But, yeah, I would agree with that order. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that – if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars, you're going to wind up with Trevor Lawrence, right? You have a ton, I mean, a butthole full of cap space, like 70. I think it's $74, $75 million in cap space.
Yeah.
God damn.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You're going to solve your quarterback position,
mm-hmm.
where you hope. You're going to solve your quarterback position. You're going to solve your lack of talent.
Yep.
You're going to hopefully hire the right head coach. You know, like, I
you're in a good position. You are. Like, yeah, it's a great job.
You can't go Doug Marrone, though. Please don't go hire Schleppy from the Technical Institute. Right?
Schleppy.
Yeah. What are you looking – if you're an NFL coaching candidate, what are you looking for?
I'm looking for – stability is going to be the number one thing, like being on the same page as far as what 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 the GM and the ownership want. And then I'm looking at I am looking at cap space, and I'm looking at the roster situation, and I'm putting a plan together. And so, yeah, when we talk about the Chargers already being in a good spot and essentially ready to win, that's attractive. I then look at, you know, other positions and who don't have a great roster, but do have cap space and flexibility. Cool. That's attractive too. We can go and make something out of that. But then you look at the Texans and you're like, well, there's a lot of dysfunction there. We're going to have to lose for a couple of seasons because we got to shed payroll and get back into the right place. That's probably not as attractive. So I guess to answer the question directly, I want stability for several years. I want either a good roster, or I want the ability to make a good roster with cap space, and I want to be able to do my own thing. And that's what I'd be looking for.
Yeah, it's interesting. Chuck says this is why the Jags should hire Urban Meyer to be their head coach, because he's a guy you don't have to worry about winning football games. You pound him for everything off the field, but you've never criticized him for the way he wins games.
Yeah, I
mean,
no, he's a winner. There's
that's
no doubt
very
about
true.
It. Yeah, he's totally a winner. And I think the only question people have about it is, can he continue to be a winner at the NFL level? Because at the college level, you know, you can control guys because you have leverage over them and their ability to get to the league.
Yeah.
But once you're in the league, that leverage goes away, and now you're just coaching grown-ass men.
Yeah, I think if you are the Jacksonville Jaguars, you're going with an offensive guy, right? Like, yeah. I think Eric Bieniemy should be the top candidate in pretty much any open job.
Mm.
I think in Jacksonville, it's Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer or Eric Bieniemy. I look at the L.A. Chargers. I ask myself, why are you not all in on Urban Meyer? Like, Urban Meyer's a guy that I would hire right now in the NFL for just about any opening. I mean, I think – if you want to win, and if the LA Chargers hire Urban Meyer, are they a better football team?
Yes, they're a better football team. But I'm just telling you, and maybe I'm biased, and I'm open to that idea.
No,
but dude, you if something happens off the field on your team while he's your head coach and he's in it the way he was in it at Ohio State, there should be hell to pay for that because you knew what you were getting yourself into.
Yeah, if I'm the Jets, I hire Eric Bieniemy. I think if I am the Houston Texans,
hello.
Who are they? Are they a figure skating team? The Houston Texans. What?
A figure skating team.
Yeah, you know, I probably try to hire Brian Daboll, or Robert Saleh from San Francisco.
How long has Saleh been trying to be a head coach?
78 years.
Jesus.
But he's a brilliant defensive mind. I don't know if he's a head coach or not. See, and what I want my next head coach of the Texans, I want a brilliant offensive guy.
Mm-hmm.
But man, they're really talented. Are they? Yeah, I could see it both ways. Saleh is a guy that I think would be a great coach in the state of Texas.
Yeah,
because you're never going to be able to even cut the bridge of his nose, no matter how hard you headbutt him in the face.
Right.
Like, you know, yeah, like he's a badass.
Yeah.
But a guy like Eric Bieniemy, I think, quells your thirst if you are, you know, Deshaun Watson.
Mm-hmm.
That gives you an offensive guy. He's a minority candidate, which is very important to Deshaun. I think Bieniemy, beyond the fact he's an excellent football coach, is the perfect fit for the most important player in your locker room, and that's Deshaun Watson.
I agree.
So, you know, like, and look, Joe Brady's a good candidate, and Brian Daboll's a good candidate. I think Urban Meyer should be your first phone call just about everywhere in the NFL.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I have no dispute that the guy wins football games. Zero dispute. I mean, he's a hell of a football coach. I just have major off-the-field concerns about it.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. I don't know that I could. How do you say to, let's use the Chargers as an example. How do you say to Herbert, hey, yeah, we're bringing this guy in. You know, we're bringing Urban in. Everything's going to be great. He's a great leader of men. Oh, wait, but he's not at Ohio State. Oh, wait, he's not at Florida. Like, how do you send that message without looking like an idiot, you know? How do you say, you know, to the press, this is some great hire, and then, you know, 18 months in the middle of week six, you know, it turns out that there's domestic violence happening in the program or the team. Like, that's what I worry about, you know? I feel like it's a great hire from a winning football games perspective, but what happens if you win for one season, then something so bad off the field happens, you got to let him go. I mean, that's what I worry about, the long-term stability.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Make sure you smash that subscribe button right now. right here on YouTube. Just search The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show on YouTube, and hit subscribe. It really helps us grow the channel, and we appreciate that. Here's a question for you. Should Bill Belichick accept the Presidential Medal of Freedom? Well, should he? He's not going to. He declined yesterday. He made a comment on it, which was surprising. But Bill Belichick released a statement saying he is not going to accept the Presidential Medal of Freedom. You know, he talked about the climate in this country, and, you know, I thought he handled it really well. Hey, Jake, are you surprised he turned it down?
I'm not surprised. I mean, it is the responsible thing to do. I mean, there's no question about that. It is the responsible thing to do. It's a good decision, both from a PR standpoint and from, you know, just him as a dude. It doesn't seem like, and I don't know, I might could be wrong, but I wouldn't take Bill Belichick to be the biggest Trump guy, but hey, I could be wrong.
They are very, very friendly. Bill Belichick, Bob Kraft, Bill Belichick, and Tom Brady are very friendly with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And it's why Belichick was offered the Medal of Freedom in the first place.
Yeah.
But Belichick said yesterday, quote, recently I was offered the opportunity to receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which I was flattered by out of respect for what the honor represents in the admission of, in the admiration for prior recipients. Subsequently, the tragic events of last week occurred, and the decision has been made not to move forward with the award. Above all, I am an American citizen with great reverence for our nation's values, freedom, and democracy.
Wait, was that a politician we're talking to? Or
was that vote Belichick? No, it wasn't. That was Bill Belichick. And I think that was very thoughtfully worded.
Mm-hmm.
I actually agree with it 100%. I think, and I guess here's the conversation around this.
Yeah.
How toxic is Donald Trump?
I think he's an extremely toxic individual. For sure.
On the regular, yeah. I think President Trump has turned himself into a very toxic figure.
Yeah.
But I look now at the people who are running from him,
mm-hmm.
Whether that's his own attorney general or Bill Belichick on the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Basically, everybody in his circles, except for a few advisors, have distanced themselves.
And we're supposed to see him for the first time in a week.
A long time.
Yeah, he has not been seen on camera since he released that video last week.
Yeah.
Telling the rioters how much he loved them and they should go home. And then after that, he released that statement.
Right.
Conceding the election.
Mm-hmm.
Not a peep out of the mouse at the house since those videos came out. And today, he is supposed to go and look at this wall on the border in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Does a guy take questions? I don't know. Like, you're in a situation where you have your vice president, and I know that this is turning into a larger, longer conversation about this.
But it matters.
You're in a situation where you basically had an angry mob trying to kill your vice president based on what Donald Trump said at that rally.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many people realize this, but Donald Trump and Mike Pence had not spoken since the rally until yesterday when Mike Pence and Donald Trump met in the Oval Office. You have a Congress that is pushing for the 25th Amendment, which is for Mike Pence and cabinet members to remove Donald Trump from office.
Yeah.
And you have a loose cannon in Nancy Pelosi saying, hey, if you don't invoke the 25th Amendment, we coming for that ass. Yeah. With articles of impeachment.
Yeah, she ain't playing.
So if you're Donald Trump, are you saying two words today?
No.
Because I'm probably not.
No, and I think I was just, and this is literally as we're talking about this, CNN just put up a thing about how the FBI apparently just put out a memo saying that they believe that there's going to be attacks on all the capitals.
Oh, have you heard the genesis of that?
No, I haven't.
There are all kinds of message boards. And really, this all starts with, I can't remember the name of the conservative social media.
Parler.
When Parler was taken off of
basically the
Play Store,
platform.
Yeah, iTunes, when Amazon shut the app down, it started, that's where this really took off, with people saying that there's going to be more insurrection on Inauguration Day and the week leading up to. And there have been threats on every state house in the country.
Yeah.
Like, they're talking about how there's going to be riots and attacks. They're talking about how armed insurrectionists are going to show up with long barrel guns and bombs. And, like, it's on.
Yeah.
And they're talking about not having Joe Biden publicly inaugurated. That it would be an
insular. I think there's real credence in that. I really do. I mean, if there is any sense, which clearly there is, of a threat of violence, if there's a threat of even a minuscule threat of Joe Biden, his life being at stake, you can't do it publicly.
I don't know. What country do we live in?
Well, this is the thing we have to be careful of. I think we got to be really careful not to take the you know, whatever you want to call them, the extremists or, you know, these folks who attack the Capitol and people like them who have those beliefs, who do those things. We got to be careful not to say, hey, those people represent our country and this is what our entire country's turned into, because our entire country is not turned into that. If that was the case, Donald Trump would have got his second term, but he didn't get his second term, right? The people and citizens of this country came out and did their thing. And that's why I say this feels like a situation where the few are speaking so loudly that it, you know, it makes it seem like this is what our country's come to.
Well, Barker makes a great point. Barker says you can't do what you've always done just because that's what you've always done.
Exactly.
If Joe Biden's life is on the line, you can't have a public inauguration.
I totally agree.
I mean, there's certainly relevance in that. I mean, are you telling me that what does he do? Get inaugurated in the Oval Office? Get inaugurated at the Supreme Court? What do you do?
There's got to be like procedure for it. I mean,
what president hasn't been publicly inaugurated in the modern era?
What I'm saying is, just because it hasn't happened doesn't mean there's not a backup plan. It just means it just hasn't happened. So yeah. Whether they do it in the Oval Office, whether they do it at Joe's house, whatever, dude, I don't know. Like,
yeah, Frank, Frank the Worst says, if you do not do this publicly, you allow them to win. But I don't know that it's win or loss. It's live or die. If you're moving the inauguration inside to protect Joe Biden, it's not win or lose.
Well, and I think
it's life or death if you're doing that.
I think too, like the other thing to his point is publicly doesn't mean outside, to be clear, when it's on this stage.
Right.
Publicly means for the entire nation to see. So publicly would mean, hey, we could do it inside, but we're still going to televise it, but we're doing it inside for safety reasons. You know, we're doing it inside to keep extremely important individuals like the next president of the United States safe. So I don't have any issue with them doing it inside in a safe environment, but I agree that it does need to be televised either way. You have, like, this is not something that you don't televise and just do it behind the scenes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch. I think today is going to be a really important day. If you're Donald Trump, stay away from the cameras.
What he's done. I mean, yeah. He's done that. But like, I think overall, I think Donald Trump is one of two things is happening. And I actually think it's both. Number one, I think Donald Trump is coming to a rude awakening that he can't just do whatever he wants and say whatever he wants and think that it's going to go the way he wants it to go. I think he's starting to understand that when he just says whatever he wants, the reaction he's going to get is either not going to go his way or he just doesn't know how it's going
to
go.
Well, and I also think he's starting to figure out pretty quickly that he doesn't have a legacy anymore. And the legacy he does have is public insurrection.
Yeah, and look at this. I mean, we have CNN on it in the background. They're talking about insurrections across the entire nation.
All 50 states have threats like against their state houses.
I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
And I think as a president, you do have a responsibility to protect those, but he's not going to do that.
No, I would agree with that. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Jake, before we get out of here today,
mm-hmm.
What is the greatest TV show of all time? The Sopranos, the reason we're talking about this is I think the best TV show of all time is The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
I think Game of Thrones is there. I think Lost is there. I think Seinfeld is there. Nothing grabbed you like The Sopranos.
Yeah.
And The reason I think The Sopranos is the best show of all time is because it doesn't matter. It just does not matter who you are, how old you are, if you've ever seen it. I can put an episode of The Sopranos on TV right now, and you can play this song, which is one of the best ever.
Fire song, dude.
Right? You like, and you can turn that up, man. I can put this show on TV right now, and millions of people will watch it.
Bam.
Even if they don't know who it is. Right? You ready? Woke up this morning. Yeah.
Like, it like, five.
Yeah, like, you're in. Let's dude. Go. Let's go kill some people. Let's do this.
Yes.
Right? Like, you're ready to go with this. And my point is that The Sopranos is the best show of all time.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter. People are going to watch it. And it's 21 years old this past weekend. It turned 21 years old.
Yeah.
And the late James Gandolfini is arguably the greatest lead character in TV show history.
Yeah.
Now, I know that you think The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City is the best show ever. I'm here to tell you it's not.
Okay.
It's The Sopranos.
Okay.
Do you even, what is your list of greatest shows ever?
Well, yeah, I mean, to me, The Sopranos is the best TV show ever, number one. I mean, I loved it. I mean, we literally watched every episode again.
You I remember don't believe that, right? You. I don't believe you.
You remember that, right?
Yes, I don't believe you.
What do you mean you don't believe me?
I just think that you are placating.
What the fuck are you, Ranger Rick?
Yeah, I mean, come on, listen to these.
You like, are what you are.
Like, these are amazing lines from that TV show.
Yeah.
Now, number two is definitely Chicago PD for me because of what Voight does and the dynamic on that show. And I do think, and we do this all the time, you can turn on any episode of Chicago PD and you're in it. It's fine. It's good.
And I routinely do that. That's usually what I have for lunch is Chicago PD.
So, you know.
You know. I look at that. Yeah. I think for me, Sopranos.
Right.
I think Chicago PD, Sopranos is number one, everything else.
Yeah.
I clearly have an engorgement, an enlarged member, if you will.
Can you measure it?
Yeah, you can actually right through my joggers. some of my favorite shows of all time, Hill Street Blues, NYPD Blue, which right. You hate.
Andy Sipowicz. I don't hate it. It's
freak.
Just yeah.
Chips when I was a kid.
Bro, you're missing Miami Vice.
I was getting there. But I think the best cop show that I've ever seen is Miami Vice.
I was going to say, come on.
That show brought me to TV as a kid.
Yeah.
I wanted to procreate with you know, Sonny Crockett.
Yeah.
I want it.
I'm thirsty to this day, man. You know. But I think Chicago PD has now passed Miami Vice in my list.
Okay.
But, you know, I think The Price is Right.
Stop.
Get
the hell out of here, dude.
See, there's two game shows on my list.
Come on.
There's two game shows on my list. Not Drew Carey's Price is Right.
Okay.
Bob Barker's Price is Right during the time when
when
you could openly sexual harass the Price is Right girls and get away with it, Harvey Weinstein style.
Dude.
Okay, cool. Like that Price is Right with Plinko, Justin Hintz winning a Ford Escort on the Price is Right playing Plinko.
He did?
Yes!
I did not know that.
Oh my God. Stop it.
I didn't know that.
Stop it. Justin Hintz won a Ford Escort on the Price is Right with a terrible hairdo.
Wow.
When he was sadly during his Wisco days.
I love that show.
Price is Right is up there.
Yeah.
And The Match Game is up there.
God.
The Match Game in its heyday, I mean, was sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Right? This is the difference, though. Like, I didn't get to see that show in its heyday.
Right, because you won't watch it.
Well, no, I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen it, but I didn't get to enjoy it when it was culturally like a big deal.
Right. If you think about what the world was like.
It wasn't like it is today.
Think about what the world was like in the heyday of The Match Game.
Yeah.
Right? Herpes was spread openly.
Okay.
It's true. The 70s was all about sex
it
on Chad Kroeger.
It is what it is.
Yeah, I can't go back and change it.
Everybody gets a test.
Yeah, facts are facts, bro. Those stains don't come out of shag carpet. But the point is, the 70s was different.
Right.
And it was a different time.
Right.
And TV was very different. If you look at a show called All in the Family, which you've probably never heard of.
Nope.
You don't even know who the hell, you know, Archie Bunker is.
You and your mom are hillbillies.
Archie Bunker is amazing. Right? And then you move into the 80s with L.A. Law. You move into the 80s with Roseanne.
Oh, my God. The West Wing.
The West Wing's a great show from not the 80s, you prick.
No, I'm just saying, though, that's one of your favorite shows.
I hate you so much sometimes.
It's one of your favorite shows.
You deserve a severe beating.
Hey, look here, man.
The West Wing is an 80s show. God, are you 10? Anyway, West Wing is one of the great shows of the 90s. And it could be the early 2000s, too. Whatever. Josh Lyman's a stud. Anyway, the point is, he's from the West Wing, Jake.
Oh, okay.
The point is, as you go through the different decades, what defines them? A lot of it is TV. If you think about L.A. Law, Hill Street Blues, if you think about the great shows of the 80s,
yeah.
Like Moonlighting was one of the great shows of the 80s that nobody talks about. Who was on Moonlighting?
I don't know.
Yeah, you weren't even boiling in the bag.
Oh, he don't know nothing.
Whatever. Anyway, the point is, TV has defined our society for generations now.
Yeah.
And I think The Sopranos is very indicative of that. I think Game of Thrones, Lost, I just...
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I do. Yep. I love it. Anyway, there you have it. Make sure you smash that subscribe button on the YouTube channel. Just search The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show on YouTube. If you're watching, appreciate you hitting the subscribe button because it helps us grow the channel. By the way, if you're listening on podcast, thank you so much. Every day, it seems like we have a big day on the audio portion of this podcast. Thanks to Spotify, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Google Play. Anywhere you get a podcast, just search The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Now all the 12-year-olds with their TV things. Welby Evangelista says, I'm vibing on Silicon Valley right now. Go away. Silicon Valley.
Yeah, okay,
that's
whatever.
That's it. Until tomorrow, Jake.
Man, when I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
Yeah, you were. You were feeling pretty dangerous.
I was ready to go today. Until tomorrow, I'm looking forward to Baker next weekend.
Everybody gets a PDH. See ya.